I am Jace Curry, the Director of Community Outreach at Women Offshore. A popular topic here at Women Offshore has centered on maternity benefits at shipping and offshore companies. In this mini-series, you and I are going to learn about different opportunities around maternity benefits and how women are accomplishing their career dreams and family planning. This is the Women Offshore Podcast. Women Offshore is a 501c3, a nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting a diverse workforce on the water. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Women Offshore Podcast. I'm Jace Curry, the fill-in host, and today I am bringing back Allie because recording podcast episodes with women who work offshore and have rotating schedules is a full-time job.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah. Allie, welcome back.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, and great job with this series. You've really captured some mind-provoking interviews, and you brought me to tears in some of the stories that were shared.
The stories from our women and our community that, you know, we've just heard over the years have been incredible. So it's been such an honor and a privilege to be able to showcase those to a larger audience and hopefully give people just a better understanding of, you know, what women can go through at sea in their personal lives, in becoming moms, and hopefully share some perspective there.
Yeah, one of the things I really hope we could change the conversation on is just how women who are mothers or who are pregnant and they want offshore careers, how they're viewed going offshore. Because listening to these episodes and how they have to manage their lives, and there's just so much to it, and they still go offshore. Not everyone can do that, but these women, they deserve a lot of respect.
Within our community and here at Women Offshore, we always want to support women in making the choices that are going to be best for them and their families, regardless of whether or not it would work for us, right?
Yeah, exactly. Before we even started the series, I did ask a question about why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we support women? And I shared that it's a no-brainer to me. But Jace, do you want to talk about that? Why some people don't?
Kind of like we talked about early on in this series, if you just don't have awareness to some of these issues or like an understanding of what a career at sea looks like while momming, and granted, I've been shoreside the entire time that I have been a mother, and that, like, it's complicated shoreside, never mind planning and working with the logistics of offshore schedules, crew changes, and especially right now with all of that being impacted due to COVID, right?
Yeah.
So I think episodes like this are just going to be really important and sharing stories within and outside of our community about how different women are just making their dreams happen, you know?
Yeah. And one of the things I've always said is that women offshore should be about opportunity, whether that's learning the opportunity or actually using our resources to earn that opportunity. I think what we did here, what you did was you showcase what opportunity might look like if someone wants to have a career and be a mom offshore and how they can make that happen. So it goes back to that core value of opportunity.
Yeah, I love that.
What we planned today was I have 12 myths or facts in front of me, and I want to go through all 12 with you and just kind of tear them apart.
Yeah, most of this is going to be based on the research and the opinions that we hold. A lot of the information that we are going to give today is US-based because that's just the territory and issues that we're most familiar with. So definitely, this is just a starting point and to help provide some guidance. And hopefully, some of the things that we talk about today change in the near future, right?
Absolutely. So we encourage you to do your own research, talk to your company, talk to maybe your union officials, do more after this. Because if you don't ask, you don't know. The way we create change is through more and more dialogue. So keep asking, keep looking into it, and let us know also what you find out. We want to hear from you.
Yeah.
So let's go with number one, Jace. My company doesn't offer maternity leave? Is that a myth or a fact?
So a lot of times, Ali, it's going to depend on the company, and it could be either or both, right? Mm-hmm. Most companies offer maternity leave for shoreside employees. And whether or not offshore employees fall into that or not, or are able to take advantage of that, can be tricky because oftentimes that's not expressly written out in within their policies. There are companies working to change this. So hopefully in later episodes, we can share a little bit more information from companies that are writing maternity policies for offshore employees. However, we heard from a woman whose disability claim was actually denied. You know, when Jordan talked about that, that was really difficult to hear because if you're a shoreside employee and you're an employee who qualifies for short-term disability, regardless of status onshore or offshore, most American companies have short-term disability built in as part of their maternity leave. So typically what that looks like is you would take short-term disability for your first 6 or 8 weeks, depending on how delivery goes, or for the time that you're under the care of a doctor. So essentially, if you're on bed rest or anything like that, as a shoreside employee, you would be put on short-term disability if you were unable to fulfill your job requirements. And so this is something that you can definitely ask your company about, because if you qualify for short-term disability, which most offshore employees will, this may be an option for you to get some paid or partially paid time.
Yeah, partially paid, right? The examples I know of where women who worked offshore and they go on short-term disability, they get 80% of their pay. So it's not the full amount, but it is something.
That varies company to company. So like with my previous employer, it was tenure based. So if you'd been there for a certain amount of time, every year qualified you for so many weeks at 100% pay. And then after that, you could take or lower paid time. And my company now actually offers short-term disability as 100% paid. So really it's going to vary based on the company.
Yeah, it depends. That's the answer. So next one, my company won't know what to do with me if I get pregnant. Myth or fact?
This is probably fact. For a lot of companies, you know, women offshore as a whole are still a relatively new phenomenon. And I hate to say that because, I mean, but it's just kind of how things are, you know?
In some areas of the world, in many areas of the world, we're still kind of at a frontier, especially when it comes to pregnancy and motherhood topics.
You know, as you're inquiring about what your company's maternity leave policies and whatnot look like, it's very possible that they don't have anything in place for offshore employees or that they don't even know where to start. So hopefully you're able to listen to these podcast episodes and maybe provide some starting guidance and saying, hey, here's what other companies do. Do I qualify for FMLA? Do I qualify for short-term disability, etc.? Instead of just asking like, oh, hey, what's the policy? And then being told there isn't any, maybe asking, can I help provide feedback as to what that could look like and becoming a part of the solution?
Exactly. Then you're also helping the next women who come after you. And I hope that if anyone here does ask that on the receiving end, on the company side, they'll say, yes, like we'd love to talk to you about that. That would be a really good outcome.
Definitely.
Next, myth or facts, I will lose my job if I tell my company I am pregnant.
Sure. So this is a really good one. Here in the US, we do have a Federal Pregnancy Discrimination Act. So that prohibits US employers from terminating employees due to pregnancy and pregnancy-related conditions. Obviously, in other countries or not on US flagships, there may not be that protection. There may be better protections. So this is definitely something that I encourage you to look into further.
And is that FMLA? Can you talk about that for a second? Is that the same thing?
It is not the same thing. So this is basically a protection. So the company cannot fire you for being pregnant. They could terminate you for other reasons, right? if you're not showing up to your watch, for example, or not showing up on your scheduled crew change day, no call, no show. It's not a get out of jail free card by any means, but they cannot terminate you for being pregnant or having a pregnancy related condition. So FMLA is different. That is the Family Medical Leave Act. And this is not, and I'm not an expert on all of these things. Like I said, this is kind of just my own research from my pregnancy and wanting to help out women within our community. But Family Medical Leave Act, essentially, if you've been with an employer for a year or more, you would qualify for this. And this is 12 weeks off of your job to take care of a family member or medical situation. The tricky thing with FMLA is that it's not legally required to be paid. So basically, it's a placeholder for your job where you can take 12 weeks off and you can't be laid off during that time. But it doesn't guarantee that you'll be paid during that time. And you don't have to use this just for pregnancy. This could be, you know, if you're a primary caregiver for a family member who is sick or going through hospice or something like that as well.
Yeah, so it can apply to other family situations.
What we have heard from women in our community is that because your FMLA does not need to be taken all at once, you can use a week here, a week there, etc. Their companies have used their 12 weeks for times that they would have been on board the vessel. So it's a time span of 24 weeks because they would have been on offshore half the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so it only applies to their hitches. And then their onshore time, their vacation is not counted. So rather than 12 weeks, it gets expanded to like 24 weeks if you have equal time on and off. One question about all that is about going back to the same ship and also having the same job. So say if they're an engineer or a DPO, they go back to those roles, but it might not be on the same vessel.
Correct. So my understanding of this is that your position is held, right? You would go back to the same role. However, it may not necessarily be on board the same vessel.
You know, we've talked about motherhood and pregnancy a few times on the podcast over the last few years. There is an interview I did with Amanda, and I think it was the very first episode we talked about being a mom offshore. And she talked about how she went to a different vessel and how stressful that was because the guys she had been with previously, they seemed very accepting of her having a baby and going offshore. But then she got to this new ship and no one knew who she was. And regardless of gender, when you get to a new vessel, you're establishing trust, but especially as a woman, you have to establish trust. And sometimes you find that you're just always establishing that trust and getting people to feel comfortable with you. And here she was having to pump milk and she stopped. I think she said she had stopped doing it because she felt so uncomfortable and was just trying to navigate the social obstacles that come with going to a new vessel.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like showing up to a new ship and having to disclose an extremely personal fact like, hi, I'm pumping. So I will need to take some time to do that and also store my milk, right? Like, it's not the onboarding conversation that you want to have.
And we know from the interviews you did how controversial that can be with storing milk on board. So next myth or fact, and this one I had to put it in there because I see it on social media all the time. It's always a man claiming that a woman must get a pregnancy test before going offshore. I'm interested to see what you think about this, Jace. Is this a hard and fast rule? What do women have to get pregnancy tests before starting their hitch each time?
I have never had to take a pregnancy test required by the company or my client or anything like that before going on board. And I was rotating, I mean, at one point, you know, every 2 or 3 weeks. My next point, pregnancy tests are like really expensive. And these costs would add up for a company quickly, especially if they had employees that were crew changing, you know, every 2 or 3 weeks on board. So this is a myth, but this is always something, like you said, Allie, that I see on social media, typically from men, but I've never heard of occurring within our community.
I've never experienced it. I've sailed on foreign vessels. I've sailed on U.S. vessels. I've never experienced this. So I just was really surprised. And there was one comment that I saw the other day where a man said that a woman must get a pregnancy test before going offshore if she's married. People are speaking about this and they don't really know, or they're making stuff up. It's hard to tell. Maybe it's true, but not in our experience, at least.
If I'm going on and off the vessel every 3 weeks, that would mean that I would have about 8 crew changes going to the vessel a year. I'm going to just say average cost of $10 for a pregnancy test. That's $86 per female employee per year. You multiply that by 200 female employees, and that is $17,333, which seems like a pretty expensive line item.
Next, myth or fact, pregnant women can't do labor-intensive tasks when offshore.
My recommendation from my personal OB while I was pregnant, and this is what I've heard from a lot of friends as well, is don't do anything that you weren't doing before pregnancy. So if you were laying on the couch eating potato chips for the previous year, which, let's be real, I think a lot of us were doing, right? Don't start going to CrossFit because you're pregnant, or don't start running 5 miles a day. If you're at that activity level and you are, you know, having a normal, low risk, all the things pregnancy, and again, this is anecdotal, this is not medical advice, it's typically safe for you to do everything that you were doing before. So, you know, chances are you've been offshore for a couple of years, you've been performing your job tasks half the year during that time, right? So as long as you're cleared by your OB, this labor-intensive tasks really shouldn't be an issue. I was very blessed to have an active pregnancy the first time around and this time as well. So lifting weights, doing boot camp, doing everything that I would kind of normally be doing. And again, this is not to say that this is everybody's experience. If you're, you know, in a situation where you're maybe being asked to lift more than you feel comfortable doing, or let's be real, like your belly is in the way because that happens and you can't see your feet past a certain point, it may be time to ask your employer for reasonable accommodations.
What I've learned to support all that is it also is about the conversations that you have with your doctor.
Absolutely.
Because pregnancies differ for everyone. And having that conversation with your doctor can mean relaying the information to your company on what tasks in your job description you can and cannot do.
I want to normalize this conversation as well. Not everyone has, you know, a relatively normal pregnancy or will feel comfortable performing these job tasks, right? For example, I can think of several tasks that I've had in previous positions and whatnot that I really wouldn't be comfortable doing. And so I think in these cases, it's important to advocate for yourself and for your family and what's in everyone's highest and best good. And that may not be going to work, you know, until you're a certain point or can't anymore. That may look like taking disability a little bit earlier, especially if you're working with certain chemicals or your job is very labor intensive. Like I would not want to be a floor hand on a jackup, especially where there's a lot of manual heavy lifting, throwing tongs, throwing slips, etc.
Another question where the answer is kind of just, it depends.
I always am going to encourage every woman to do what she feels is best for herself and for baby. And there's no shame in not being able to do your job.
We want you to know that we're here for you if you feel that shame and that we admire you and we want to see you working offshore whenever the time is right, but it might not be right now. So reach out if you want to talk.
Yeah. And to go back to one of our earlier points too, Allie, I think this is why it's so important to have good leave policies in place and to have options, whether it is disability or partial pay or whatever, because it's such a double-edged sword in that women will be shamed for not being able to perform their job tasks, but then adequate leave solutions are not always provided.
There needs to be a lot more communication between everyone. Moving on, next myth or fact for you, Jace. If you have to fly to a ship, you cannot go on a helicopter when pregnant.
This will be based on your company's policy and then also the helicopter company's policy. So what I was told by one company was that as long as I could fit in the seat, be able to emergency evacuate if needed and fit the seatbelt, then I was good to fly. I don't know of any helicopter companies that have policies prohibiting women from flying, but that's not to say that they don't exist. So this is definitely something where I would check in with your company and then also with the heliport as well.
We're halfway through. Next myth or fact, if you are pregnant, it's okay to go offshore if you're on a coastal ship and not on an ocean-going vessel. And that is because if you're on a ship near the coast, you could be more easily helivacked in an emergency, meaning an emergency helicopter would come get you.
Again, I hate to have another it depends, but it really is. My biggest concern with on an ocean going vessel would be, what is the rotation, right? Am I going to be working 3 months? Am I going to be working 9 months? Am I going to be in a port where I may run into crew change issues? For example, like going to Antarctica, where there's always the possibility of getting iced in, maybe a hitch that you would want to turn down, right? But again, we can still face issues coastally as well, whether that's bad weather in the North Sea or hurricanes in the Gulf. So it's just always something to consider.
Yeah, I think there are just so many factors that need to be considered, especially with a doctor. How far into the pregnancy are you? What kind of medical supplies are there on board? What kind of medical support does the company have if something does go wrong? There's just a lot to unpack here.
And another thing to look at too, Allie, would be how far along are you and is the pregnancy viable outside the womb at this point? Because in those conditions, every minute can matter in terms of getting to potentially life-saving equipment.
The answer is depends with a capital D.
Yeah, definitely something to talk to your doctor about. And then again, weigh your own considerations. Don't be scared to advocate for yourself to do what's best for you. Instead of being at a location that's 2 hours out via helicopter, can you move to a facility that's, 14 miles offshore?
Again, opening up the conversation, asking some hard questions and hopefully receiving an answer right away and a way to figure out how to make it work for everyone. Next, myth or facts, there are no maternity clothes to wear when pregnant offshore. How do you clothe yourself?
Yeah.
I doubt companies have maternity coveralls in storage waiting for you. What do you do, especially if you are required to wear what your company provides and you can't wear your own thing? That's a hard one.
This is a hard one. And here at Women Offshore, we've heard from our community members for years that coveralls don't, not pregnant, right? Coveralls don't fit properly.
Right. Whether you're pregnant or not, like they don't fit properly most of the time.
Yeah. And it is a safety issue, potentially, depending on what the fit issues are. I would personally would probably ask for a policy exemption as long as I was able to find something suitable that met the intention of the provided coveralls, right? For example, in offshore oil and gas, oftentimes you will be wearing FRCs. So Tyndale is a company that makes maternity FR bib overalls, and you could pair that with an FR shirt and talk to your procurement, your safety, and your management representatives and just say, hey, again, this is a solution that I found. Is this suitable? FR Girls of Texas as well can also modify women's jeans and sew in an FR belly panel. So basically, you would take your regular FR jeans and turn them into maternity jeans. Typically, what we're told is just, oh, size up and coveralls. But I mean, we've already seen what kind of issues that can cause, right?
Some advice I can offer around asking for something like this is don't accept I don't know as an answer from anyone. Keep asking. And then get to the point where it's either a yes or a no, because I don't know is not enough.
That's a great point.
There has to be a policy on this, or at least a decision maker who can make the decision for you. And so just keep asking. Maybe you're not asking the right person, and that's okay that they don't know. If they don't know, ask them who would know, and keep going up the chain of command to find out what the final answer really is.
Or, you know, if it is an I don't know and they are the person who will make the decision, asking them something like, okay, great, can I follow up with you by the end of the week or something like that.
We only have a few more left. Myth or facts? That's what we're exploring on the Women Offshore podcast today about pregnancy and motherhood offshore. So next one, is it a myth or fact? Pregnant women are a liability on board if there's a shipboard emergency. We're not talking about the woman who's pregnant having an emergency necessarily, but say there's a fire or flooding.
Sure.
Is she going to be a liability to the crew and people around her?
This is a great question. And I think this goes to just some of the complexities here, right? If the station bell said that my position was supposed to be a member of the fire team or something hazardous like that, and I was pregnant, especially if I was facing issues already with balance or coordination, which can be an issue for some women, not all, I would probably ask the captain for a station bell modification, right? Because there's nothing worse than an emergency and then also having a person down as well simultaneously. However, in terms of personal evacuation and self-rescue, I think that's just one of those things that's going to be important to keep tabs on as your pregnancy progresses, right? Could I still self-rescue if there were to be an emergency? Would I be able to get myself to the lifeboat, right? And again, consulting with your doctor, with your leadership on board, it's all going to be important. A lot of times they think the captain or OIM just really doesn't want the responsibility of having, or the liability rather, of having a pregnant woman on board, which is understandable. But I mean, is it more of a liability than someone who struggles with vertigo or, you know, maybe a little bit overweight or something like that? Similar situations, and I think that just needs to be analyzed on a one-on-one basis for sure.
So another, it depends. And maybe there are ways to change your role so that if you are, say, the chief mate, you're in charge of the fire team and you're 6-7 months pregnant, you take a different role on board. But then that could be an opportunity for the second mate to train. You know, there are ways to, I think, utilize this as an opportunity for others, maybe, depending on the role.
Yeah, Ali, I really like that reframe, right? How can we create opportunities for others? And hopefully this, like all these it depends answers, just gives people something to think about, things that they may not think about while they're sitting in their OB's office at a regular appointment. But after hearing it on this episode, they're like, oh, I need to discuss this, or I need to bring awareness to this part of my job. Because let's be real, how many of our parents don't actually know what we do? Never mind our medical professionals, right?
So we have three more myths or facts to wrap up this episode, and they're all going to center around home life. We've been talking about offshore life for the most part. Let's talk about home life. So myth or fact, the baby and husband will suffer if the mother leaves to go offshore. And I've seen this on social media several times from different people who are attacking other women, saying you shouldn't have an offshore career.
Yeah, this is a good one, Ali. First of all, I will say that in addition to having worked in the industry myself, I'm also an oil field wife. I love my husband, but I really love him when he's gone, right?
It reminds me of that quote, I can't miss you unless you leave.
Exactly. And so we never ask this question of men that go offshore, right? We never say, oh my gosh, your baby and your wife will suffer if you're out there and working these long rotations. Let me tell you, like, it's not easy to be the stay-at-home parent, especially if you're also working. But again, the options and the money and the time off that women and the freedom that women are able to have by working offshore is really important, and probably going to, if they're making the decision to remain out there, they've weighed the benefits and weighed the cons and decided, like, well, this is what's going to create the best life for my family, right?
dads are not babysitters in my mind.
Yeah.
They can parent. They can take on a lot of responsibility, and it shouldn't all fall on the mother to be the parent, the caretaker. And everything I've learned about supporting women in the workplace, there's a connection there with home life. And the more men step up to take on responsibilities within the home, the better women do in the workplace. Because it's unfair for them to have to take on both and be responsible for the majority of the work at home and then do a job. And so when I see comments like this, it's like we should be empowering men to step up. We should expect men to step up in the home and be parents and not just babysitters and putting it all on the mom.
Definitely. I saw a comment in our community earlier today that was essentially like, you know, it's called parenting. It's not daddy daycare. And yeah, we need to also empower fathers to take on a good parenting role. Chances are, like, you know, if you are having a career at sea and you know that that's your long-term career, you either want to have a co-parent who is going to be supportive of that or build another community system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need the support. Yeah. And that's, I think, been obvious throughout all these interviews is that you need a support system at home.
Another thing I want to touch on here, too, is that, you know, my parents worked tons of hours and my mom had just a higher profile career than my dad did. I went to daycare, was fine, right? Like, learned a lot, could count and read really well. And so we can normalize that as well, like care outside the home. Non-maritime families do that all the time. And also, it's not necessarily the husband that is going to stay home with the child. So, you know, we've talked to single moms in our community or people whose partner also shift works. And so the children are potentially staying with other family members or long-term caregivers or something like that. So that's an option as well. And to kind of bring this full circle, like a happy mom and a woman who is fulfilled in her career, in her personal life, in her home life is without a doubt like the most important thing for baby. A lot of women struggle with postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. And one of the things that can contribute to that even more is a feeling of isolation or feeling like they're not contributing in some way.
One more thing to add to this part is just the need, right? And for many people, it has to be a dual income family. So when a woman can go offshore, when she finds that opportunity and she can bring in quite a bit of money into the household, that is sometimes absolutely needed. And so we have to keep that in mind too, that people's financial situations can vary, of course. And sometimes this is the skill set the woman has. She's a mariner or she's an offshore worker, and this is just what she does. And granted, she might be able to find a job shoreside. However, it may not be as high paying. And so it would be helpful to the family or almost necessary for her to maintain her career.
Most shoreside roles that female mariners are qualified for without additional training or school are going to be in lower paying positions than what they're making at sea. And so that's a really important point to touch on there, unless they're going into like a shoreside management role or something like that.
Second to last, myth or fact, women who have babies will not even want to go back offshore. So say they've been working offshore, they get pregnant, they take some time off for the pregnancy. There is this statement that they won't even go back afterwards. What do you say, Jace?
Yeah, this is a really good one, Allie. And I'm going to draw from my personal experience here again. Going back to work and leaving my daughter after my maternity leave. And this is, keep in mind that I was going to come home for lunch and I was going to be home by 4 o'clock that afternoon. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. Right. And that wasn't leaving for 21 days or 3 months at a time. That being said, that was 3 months postpartum, essentially. And now a year and a half later, I'm so excited to go back to work every day. Right. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go have adult human interaction for a while. And so a woman may not want to go back offshore initially. It's a very difficult thing. We've heard from women in our community just how difficult it is to, I mean, it's difficult to leave your family, right? Never mind a relatively new baby.
Right. I mean, it's difficult for me to leave my dog.
Yeah.
I don't have a human baby, but I have him and I pamper him and, you know, he's my little baby and I didn't give birth to him, of course, but like it's still hard enough with that. And I'm leaving to go offshore in a few days and packing up all my stuff to go on my rotation and saying goodbye to my significant other and to my dog. It hurts. It's hard. It's really hard. I can't imagine doing that with a baby as well.
Yeah. And so I think that's just an important thing to bring home. Like if you're a mom and, you know, you're about to go back for your first hitch offshore, it is perfectly normal to have all those feelings of, oh my gosh, do I want to go back? Do I want to do this? Should I take extended time off? And again, I would absolutely advocate for what's best for your mental health and your family in that situation, right?
That goes back to, I think, to your interview with Coronado and how she wasn't ready. And she said that was okay. She wasn't ready to leave her newborn child and her significant other. And so she just asks for a little bit more time off and they're making it work financially to be able to do that. So I think it goes back to something that has been an underlying theme, especially in this episode, of you got to do what's right for you. And not going back might be the case. Going back might be the case, asking for more time. But to say that women who have babies will not go back is unfair. And we shouldn't put this blanket statement on the choice women should be making with the support of their families.
Yeah. And birth is very difficult. Pregnancy and birth are very difficult. They can be potentially traumatic experiences for a lot of people. And a woman may not be physically ready to go back to work. Baby aside, right? Baby or not, after giving birth, like there may be physical things to take into consideration. And this is something you don't think about until you've had kids. But, you know, you can have ab separation, you can have tearing, you can have all sorts of complications. And so going back to a very physically demanding job after 3 months, which is really no time at all, right? It might seem really difficult or impossible. So that being said, you know, if you are in management or leadership or just working on board with a pregnant woman, I think it's unfair to say, oh, she won't come back or she won't want to come back, because that's a pretty gross generalization.
Last myth or facts, women who are mothers are irresponsible when they have offshore careers.
And we touched on this earlier, Allie. I'm glad to bring this one full circle. First of all, mom guilt is real. And so for every negative comment that a mother receives, chances are she has already thought that to herself. She has already questioned if she is selfish or a bad mom for going back to work. And so if this is something that you are considering saying to a woman or about a woman who has recently had a child, I would encourage you to probably keep your mouth shut. However, that being said, like for a lot of women, this is going to be one of the best possible options to afford them, you know, financial stability, right? A sense of purpose and freedom. Both time freedom, financial freedom, all the things, especially for a woman who has gone and gotten a degree from a maritime school. I hear from a lot of our community who are DPOs or licensed mates. They're like, I don't even know what I would go do if it wasn't this, because the career path just doesn't necessarily have a ton of different ways for you to go shoreside.
Everything I've learned, everything I've seen when I talk to women is they are overly responsible. They are figuring out every single part of the logistics, like getting breast milk home. And there's so much that goes into planning out how you're going to go offshore. I want to flip this and say that it's a fact that women who are mothers with offshore careers are very responsible.
Probably the most responsible people
yeah.
we know.
Yeah, exactly. And they should be respected and treated in a way where they have support and not be ostracized by their crew or their company. We should be talking about policies. And what I imagine too is we're not talking about a lot of women, right? Women only make up, depending on where you are in the world, 2-7% of fleets. And so we're talking about just a handful of women. But when you have women who have established careers and you empower them to maintain those careers, even through starting a family, you are retaining at least a few women. And that does add up, especially when you only have a few women in your fleet to begin with. You know, when it comes to maternity benefits, providing coveralls, yeah, there's some expense involved. But how many women are really going to be using that? And you're going to be making a difference in lives that are most likely pretty established within your workforce. They've been sailing for several years and they want to just see their career grow at your company. And they're getting pushed out because of lack of communication and lack of resources. So yeah, it's just, we needed to have this conversation. We need to keep empowering women. So thank you, Jace. Thank you for tackling all this. I know it was a lot of work and I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you for compiling these facts and myths, Allie. I had a lot of fun learning and researching for this episode. Again, I encourage you to reach out to your employer or, you know, find out what the specific policies and, you know, acts and different things in your country or region are and what protections are available to you.
Keep pushing forward. Keep going after your career dreams. Ask a lot of questions. And yeah, we're here.
And feel free to share that information with us so we can help distribute it to more women in the industry.
We'd love to talk with you. I know, Jace, we've talked about how we don't want the conversation to end around this topic. So you've reached out in the community to gather more ideas for more episodes. And what I've learned is that there's a lot more to cover.
Yes, there certainly is, Allie. So I look forward to some follow-up episodes around these topics as well.
Thank you, Jace. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Allie. Bye for now. Thanks for listening. Here at Women Offshore, we're dedicated to talking about what impacts women in the offshore workforce. If you've enjoyed this episode and want to contribute, please donate and consider setting up a recurring donation at womenoffshore.org/donation. Until next time, stay safe out there and we'll talk to you soon.
Before you go, here are some events on deck from my colleague Savannah at the Oil and Gas Global Network.
Hey everybody, it's Savannah from OGGN and here are the events on deck for June 2021. This month, we have 6 events, but if you'd like the full list, you can click the link in the show notes to sign up for our events newsletter. We send it out every month, and it includes more info about the events that I talk about here. We even include events that occur 2 months ahead of time, so if you're interested in always staying in the loop about oil and gas events, make sure to check that out. This month, OGGN will be hosting 2 events. One is online and one is in person. For our online event, we're hosting a live stream titled Deal Value Creation, M&A, and ONG. This is going to be on June the 2nd. And for our in-person event, we're relaunching our happy hours. It's been far too long since we had a good happy hour, so I'm sure plenty of you will be excited to hear that our next happy hour will be at the Cannon in Houston, Texas on June 24th. At this event, you'll be able to meet some of OGGN's hosts and network with other oil and gas industry professionals, all while enjoying great food and drinks. We hope to see you there. Other than OGGN's events, we have 2 in-person and 2 online events. First up, we have our 2 in-person events, which are the Energy Capital Conference on June 2nd at the Omni Houston Hotel and the U.S. Police and Fire Championships from June 10th to the 21st. The Police and Fire Championships will be hosted in multiple locations, so make sure to check out our events newsletter for more information about that. Next, we have our 2 online events, the first being the Post-Industrial Summit Series. This event actually started on May 4th, but it'll be ending later this month on June 22nd, so there's still plenty to see. And our second online event is the Big Data Industry Summit from June 9th to 10th. If you have any questions about these events or any of our shows, make sure to reach out to me through my email in the show notes. That's all for June. I hope you guys have a great month, and thanks for tuning in.